Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on April 8th, 2015. I'm our Ruler of Time, and with me, as always, is Rolo T. How's it going, man?
Nick, I am doing relatively well. I'm good for the most part. Things are good. I'm currently in the process of watching Walking Dead. I think I mentioned it a couple times. I'm into the fourth season. Mm-hmm. The show is slowly making me just contemplate. Like, even though it's a fantasy world where I know the zombies aren't around, I'm just like, oh, this world's so sad. All these children without parents. But I just got past the governor, who I don't know if you've heard of him before.
He's like, I don't know anything about Walking Dead other than the fact that there are zombies and people are trying to stay away from the zombies. There's that one meme with the kid and the guy who goes Coral or whatever to his face.
I don't feel like it's that bad. I don't feel like Carl. I watched Lost, so I heard fucking Michael scream out Walt to an extent that I don't. A dad calling for his child in the television show is never going to beat that.
Well, okay.
Basically, you've got a grasp on the show. But there's this character they meet in the third season called the Governor, and to basically sum it up very quickly, he's completely batshit insane.
Okay.
As you'll quickly find out about the Walking Dead world, zombie apocalypse came about. Everyone who's around generally at this point is some kind of level of insane at this point, but he's created this awesome community. Everything there seems very perfect, and the first episode you get a very brief look at him and you're just like, oh, okay, this guy actually seems like he's someone who's good. So you sit there, you're like, I'm waiting for the inevitable twist that turns out, oh, he's a complete freak. You don't even get to the first episode before he's like fucking gunning down U.S. soldiers and stealing their shit. You're like, oh, okay, this guy, and like seeing in a room with fucking like heads in jars. You're like, okay, this guy's a complete weirdo.
Why would you want heads in jars?
Because he's insane, and all of his plans are awful. And about five episodes past that, every episode's just him doing something else completely insane. Like, he's fucking brushing zombie daughter's hair and just all this awful shit. And the episode I'm watching has like a description that's like, the governor finally shows his true colors.
What?
I was like, to who? Because we've watched this freak fuck around for like eight episodes. Nobody is shocked he's a complete weirdo.
It's like, I'm actually just, this is all just a facade that I put on in order to scare people into obeying me. I'm actually perfectly reasonable still.
That's what I was waiting for. Like, the governor shows his true colors. He's actually not completely batshit loony. But no.
Puts on, like, an apron and starts baking cookies for everybody.
He starts tending to graves and helping survivors into the camp without being a bitter rage monster. You're like, oh, wow, this guy actually turned things around. No, the point I wanted to bring up, though, he's well-loved from people because he's this very charismatic, creepy villain. Essentially sort of like their Joker, in a way. He's just this very strange person. You know, kind of it's interesting in this world. I don't get it, though. He is, without a doubt, like, I know it's a series based on a comic book, but every time he's on screen, it's, like, so goofy and wackily evil in this world that is otherwise pretty grounded that it's jarring, Nick. Every time I see him, just completely jarring. He has a room full of heads and jars. He's, you know, fucking, I can't even explain without getting into the spoilers for things. But basically, every time he's goofy. Well,
some of our listeners probably care.
Yeah, some of them are maybe working through it, like I am. That's the thing. I finally made it to the fourth season, so I can make references without being like, oh, hey, man, I got your hand cut off. Sure, like Merle. But don't tell me if anything happens to Merle, because I haven't gotten through the first season yet. You know, I'm at that point, so I want to spoil for people. But he's weird, Nick. It's wacky, and Walking Dead is slowly making me cry. But on the plus side, Nick, yes. Friday Daredevil comes out, and I can just stop watching Walking Dead for a while and just go into binge watching Daredevil.
Do you watch any other Marvel TV series?
I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I follow that, and I watched all of Agent Carter, but I only watched one or two episodes actually live. The rest of it I just caught on demand. Mm-hmm.
I don't watch like any TV live unless it's like a live event anymore. So
I catch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as it comes out. Usually it's worth the wait, but
I always feel kind of bad because like my entire family is way better at closely following those shows than I am. So, you know, every now and again I'll sit down and watch an episode with them. And With Agent Carter, I caught just about every episode, so I was fine with that. You know, I was following along with that. But then, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like, I didn't watch, like, the first half of this season. Then it comes in and it's like, wait, why does Sky have superpowers? And why does that, why are they doing this? Wait, aren't they loyal to that person? What's going on?
You're like, oh, Nick, you missed a couple things.
You missed some very important things.
You're like, where's Agent Triplett? Oh, Nick, I'll sit you down.
I learned about them, and I'm just like, who are they again? Which one was that?
You're like, I know this guy from something.
Was that Patton Oswalt's kid?
How's he doing? Is Patton Oswalt Agent Coulson yet?
How many clones do they have for him?
Is Patton Oswalt Iron Man yet? Is that happening? Has he joined the Avengers?
That would be a very different movie. Anyway, enough of Walkley Marvel recap. We've got actual manga to talk about. We're going to be holding off on Spirit Circle until next week, although I am actually kind of eager to talk about that one, which, for reasons I won't reveal, maybe he hated it, maybe he loved it, you know, shut up, you have to find out. Anyway, we've got a new manga, seemingly, well...
Hold on one sec, stream went down, so I'm going to stop the recording. I'm assuming the recording...
Okay, and here we go. Recap portion, weekly manga recap, because, well, no Soul Circle, this Spirit Circle. Soul Circle?
It's
Ghost Soul Circle, Soul Circle.
Ectoplasm Circle.
Yes, Mind Circle. Yes, it's one of those.
Yeah.
Pick your
portion. Shinigami Circle.
Shinigami Circle actually sounds pretty great. I might actually read that if it existed.
Oh, man, if only we didn't have fucking Black Clover this week, that'd have been a perfect transition into Bleach, too.
It would have.
But there's no Shinigami in Black Clover.
Not yet, anyway. Maybe it'll get to the point where there is one, and then we'll be like, aha!
Remember that reference you made?
We inadvertently predicted this.
Remember that reference we made 6 years ago? Now it applies! I'm optimistic for not only Black Clover, but the chances of weekly manga recap being around in 6 years.
I think that chance seems higher to me, honestly. okay, so Black Clover has joined the Shonen Jump Online lineup, and so we are going to be covering that on a permanent basis from here on. And honestly, it's probably the easiest on us to try to recap because it's a formula that we are used to. It's battle adventure style manga with recognizable character archetypes. So, yeah.
Some very recognizable.
Although, we've only got one chapter this week. I assume we're going to have multiple chapters?
Yeah, next week there's going to be 3 chapters.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
And I think there's 3 chapters the week after that, I heard as well. So, it's going to be a lot next week. But this week, we ease ourselves back into the series.
Right. So this is page 4, The Black Bulls. Last time, our hero Asta he joined the Black Bulls, and when he got into their headquarters, it turned out that all of them were a bunch of weirdos. And so we begin this chapter with Asta being like, okay, I've got to make a good first impression, and he bursts in, and he announces himself very loudly, and he's like, I just joined the Black Bulls, and it's great to meet ya! And nobody's fucking paying any attention because they're too busy being fucking weird, basically.
Just explosions and a giant dude who just goes and someone eating and the one girl who's naked's just like, I remember getting into a drinking contest with strange old guy and then nothing, which is actually pretty concerning.
That's horrifying, yes. I also like how there's the guy who is seemingly just kicking a couch.
He has a mirror behind him, so I think he's supposed to be extremely vain. I vaguely recall seeing a glimpse of him in the previous one.
So presumably he's like turned around and is like, stop it!
Yeah, you're ruining my looking at myself.
Although he mentions that his little sister might hear them, so... Maybe a bit of foreshadowing there. Anyway, so a random ball of energy almost hits Asta, and people are fighting and so on and so forth. Finally, the captain of the Black Bulls... What does he do? He just gathers up energy in his hand and he hammers it against the wall and he just gets their attention by, well, causing even more destruction, of course. And Asta's like, oh, wait a second example. So everyone is like, oh, Captain Yami, you're back. And everyone's so happy to see him. And they're like, oh, hey, have this food, Captain. And they're trying to get his attention to talk to him about stuff. And they're talking to him about his journey to the capital. And Yami is just like, oh, you guys like me that much, huh? But you're annoying, so shut the fuck up.
Stop talking to me.
And then he introduces Asta as their newest member and says, don't haze him so good he dies. That grammar hurts me a little bit.
Well, it also implies that the purpose of hazing
these people to death.
Well, not only that, but it also implies, you know, don't haze him so good. Well, first it should be so well, but don't haze him so good he dies. Wouldn't that imply then that the purpose of hazing is to bring people as close to death as possible?
Yeah.
Like, that's the reward you get. Good hazing means they died.
Good hazing means that they suffered, I think, is what.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, true.
Look, it's better hazing thus far than 90% of college fraternities, so...
Oh, those are awful. Oh.
Nobody had to jerk off into anything yet, so I'm assuming this is a better scenario.
Or eat anything that people jerked off on, or stuff like that, yeah.
It's astounding how many scenarios of...
This will totally get us chicks, you know, doing all this gay stuff.
Eating all this dude's semen will totally get me laid.
So Asta introduces himself again, and this time people actually pay attention, and Captain Yami says, oh, make sure that you guys get along and stuff, and Asta says, we'll set records for getting along. That actually seems incredibly dorky to me.
Wasn't Asta supposed to be, like, a ridiculous dork?
Yeah, but, well, yes, I guess that's in character for him. Half-naked chick says, oh, you're from the boonies, huh, but you got into the Magic Knights. How about I reward you with a special treat? And Asta's almost seems ready to say, hell yes, I'm 14 and horny. And then he goes, oh, but my heart is already set on my goddess, the nun from my village. Doesn't even say her name, which is concerning to me. She had a name, I remember.
Oh, it's never going to come up again.
I don't remember what her name was, but I remember that she had a name. So it's weird that he doesn't say, sister wed with so-and-so, the nun from my village, as opposed to just, you know, a nun from my village.
What I love, though, is, I don't know her name, so I'm just going to call her Kana. Kana's like, you're from the boonies. Oh, you're so attractive. I'm going to reward you with a special... Oh, hold on. Like, she just fucking vomits all over him. That was actually relatively amusing to me. Like, she's trying to be all seductive, and she's just like, oh, wait, hold on. Vicious alcoholic here.
So then a new guy introduces himself. He's got stupid fucking hair. He's like, oh, so you're a new black bull, you little wuss. Well, I don't know how you managed to get Mr. Yami to convince you to join us, but if you want to wear our robe, you must earn respect from me, Magma Swing. No, wait, Magna Swing. Magma Swing would probably be actually kind of cool. Magna Swing.
I'm like, either way is a pretty ridiculous name.
Yes. And Asta's like, oh my god, it's a Magic Knight's robe. And he wants it so badly that a little arm comes out of his gaping mouth.
So weird and creepy, but amusing in its own way.
So, Magnus...
He's got, like, these sparkling eyes, too. He's like a fucking, like a Dengeku Daisy character or something, like, who just saw a hot dude.
His pupils are fucking black holes now. So, Magnus Swing... I hope this guy has an actual name, because that's so stupid. Magnus Swing is like, alright, if you want it, then you'll have to prove yourself to me. So they go outside and square off, and he's like, alright, I'm gonna launch a magic attack, so if you manage to block it or avoid it, then I will give you this robe. And people are like, he's just making this shit up again, isn't he? And Asta's like, it's okay, though, my sword will cut it, so I'll be fine. So Magna Swing launches this, well, he throws a fireball.
I can hear you dying every time you have to say his name.
Magna Swing. So he throws a fireball, and there's a long kind of slow-mo narration sequence where Asta is getting ready like a batter at the plate, basically, and then he's like, oh, I'm going to die.
Credits. That's the explanation.
And there's an explanation that basically is like, he just understood instinctively that although he's been able to counter every single magic he's encountered with his sword, with his current magic and with his current skills, he would just is completely unable to locate enough to cut it. And if he does, he won't be able to kill the attack's force. He would just take a split attack to the face. And when he realized his limits, his mind shut down, but his body hadn't given up. His well-trained body's super reflexes put up one last struggle and found a way out. As in mid-swing, Asta turns his sword sideways and knocks the fireball back with the flat of his blade and knocks it right into Magna Slash and kills him! Yay! No more having to say stupid. So, I actually like reaction of everybody. Of course, they're surprised by this, and one guy's just like, oh, wow, I didn't actually have to save the new guy for once. Which, yeah, it is nice that, like, he was actually not going to let Asta just get hit in the face. So
they weren't just going to let him get exploded.
Right. And so Yami analyzes, the blade of Asta's sword cuts magic and the flat side repels it. And Asta's just like, oh my god, it does that! Because he's Naruto, basically. So then the smoke clears, Magna Slash looks really pissed off, Asta gets really freaked out, and then Magna Slash gets all happy looking. He's like, oh man, they're completely rocked! You actually deflected my magic and sent it back at me! And he, like, pats Asta on the back, like, in congratulation, but really hard, so he's, like, foaming from the mouth, which, I don't know how that works, but whatever. And, Asta explains, oh, I don't have any magic whatsoever. I've got no magic at all. Oh, well, you did that without any magic? That's actually really cool! And everybody in the guild is like, ah, that's awesome! Welcome to the Black Bulls! And, then the guy who's going to save him is like, alright, for the second one, let's both try and kill each other. And then someone else is like, here, eat this cupcake thing. And
Asta, he does, and he's really excited about it.
Yeah, but he like, says thanks, but he just thinks it. Whatever, that's weird.
It is weird. Like, hey, come on, try this. And he clearly eats it, and he's like, yay. But he does mentally say thanks.
Yeah, instead of just saying it out loud.
Asta's a rude little piggy.
Magna Slash gives Asta his cape, and they imbue it with magic so that it's all super shiny and official and stuff, and they're like, now you're a member of the Black Bulls Magic Knights. But as this is going on, a tsundere love interest girl, I'll assume, with pigtails is observing from a high vantage point, and she goes, so that's the other new member. What a little insect.
Nick, you are presuming too much. There is nothing about this character.
The exact correct amount.
There's nothing about this character that suggests she's a tsundere love interest.
This series since day one.
Oh man, it'd be great if next chapter she fucking kills Yami and turns out she's actually like the main antagonist. You're just like, wow, Nick, you were really off on that.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or next chapter, she's just like, Asta, you're a baka! And storms off. You're just like, nope, Nick, you nailed that one.
Just fucking throws some article of clothing at Asta, which it hurts. Gets out like a paper fan to snap him over the hand with. And it's just like, wow, how many of these are you going to fulfill?
She's weird to me. I don't know why. There's something about the art in this series. I think it's her hair. She looks like a doll when I look at her. Like, I feel like it's like a walking doll, and she unnerves me. So I'm hoping next week she gets hit with a fireball and loses all of her hair, so that way she doesn't have it, and I can be like, ah, she's a human now.
She looks surprisingly normal for the character designs we've seen in this series, I think. Because everyone's kind of like very odd faces, except for her.
Mm-hmm. She's very realistic in a series where everybody else is a bit weird.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to Bleach, and I had to flip 3/4 of the way through the chapter to find this stupid title. Bleach 622, The Agony.
You couldn't have guessed that from the chapter, Nick?
Yeah. The Agony of reading Bleach, basically. So, last time, Aizen showed up and was just like, why are you guys so terrible? Check it out. Spirit pressure. Kill all the stupid black eyeball thingies. And Rukia is the first to go, oh my god, it's Aizen. What the fuck are you doing here? Why aren't you in prison? Which, I like that. You know, the guy who had her you know, arrested on trumped up charges, and then was going to have her executed just to get the Hokuyoku, and then basically stabbed her into the chest with his bare hand. Yeah, this is like the first time they've interacted since then, so of course she's pissed off to see him. That's nice. As opposed to, like,
as opposed to Uryu being like, you know, Captain fucking Mirror, you're a pretty cool dude when you get down to it.
So, yeah, Aizen's like, oh yeah, it's been a long time, Ryukyu Chiki. Although I don't really recall talking to you since I left the court guards. So, yo, congrats on being vice captain.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. You're in an elite club with, Hisagi and whatever the wolf dude's captain is. Iba? I think. Iba. Boom. Yeah. Check it out. I remember people.
Let's see if I can remember these fucking things. Sasakibe's dead.
Nick, Sasakibe the Great. Remember, he was a very Sasakibe important...
Sasakibe, the totally impressive guy with the wicked awesome Bankai that Yamamoto, whose Bankai Yamamoto defeated with ease and didn't have more than 3 lines of dialogue outside of flashback before he died.
I forgot!
Way more dialogue after he died.
I forgot that he had this awesome Bankai that Yamamoto was like, never use it.
Never, I will never use my Bankai so that I can remain subservient to Yamamoto. What a noble person! Kaku's like, wait a minute!
We really could have used that.
What about me? No, how dare you not use your Bankai, Yukaku, fuck you.
You're an asshole.
Oh, God.
You have so much to learn.
Let's see. And then there's Omaeda. And then Kira, who died in, like, the least important way possible. If he's dead, which I guess he's dead.
That's another person we could be like, Sasuke and Kira, who's dead and never coming back?
I'm not gonna add that on. No, fuck that.
just every week, Sane, more of a question.
Hinamori, Renji, Iba, Matsumoto, Hisagi, Nanao, Yachiru, Nemu, and Rukia. That's the vice captains.
Wow. I'm pretty impressed by that, Nick.
Well,
if I was a chick, I'd be as wet as hell.
We've previously established that I have lots of useless bleach character knowledge, so.
Anyway. I'd have been like, Eva, and I think there's a Tosin's dude, whatever, you know what I mean.
So anyway, she's like, what are you not doing in prison? And Aizen says, sentence was dropped. And Ruki is like, why would... who would ever do something so fucking stupid? And she's like, it was me.
Yo! He just rolls in. What's up, guys?
Everyone's like, Captain Kyoraku!
I really kind of want him to... I want fucking... what's his name? Kyoko... what the fuck is it? The Raiden right here. I know, but I forgot it.
Kyoraku. His name is on the page, right there.
Kyoraku Shunsui. That's the name I generally call him.
I said
by.
That name too.
I know, and I forgot it in the process. I want Shunsui to fucking walk
no
here.
No you're impressed when I had to demonstrate bleach.
Yeah, I'm like, Nick, how do you remember all these names? Like the one right there, or the one you just said. I want Shunsui.
How can you remember these names unless they're really, really stupid? Like na 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 na.
Yeah, I remember na 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 Najikoop and Popo or Pepe.
Katniss Catnip.
How do you not remember Askin Naklavar? No, I just thought it'd be interesting if Shunsui walks in and he's just fucking Robert Downey Jr. from Iron Man, like he's just got AC/DC playing. He's like, yo, I did that. What are you gonna do about it? Just smarmy and shitty to everybody.
Oh, God. So, Shunsui is like, yeah, it's because we really need his help, and everybody's like, seriously, are you fucking insane? Everyone is shitting on this plan. Everybody is shitting on it. And Chunsui says, oh, okay, guys. Well then, let me tell you about the court guards. We cannot protect the world with principles, so get off your fucking high horses. I don't consider using evil to defeat evil as evil. God, that's an awkward sentence.
It's a weird one, too, because it's very much like conversation done. Like, he's just like,
and no one has any idea how to respond to that. Like he's just like, I don't care.
He's like, the ends justify the means, and nobody has the time for a counter-argument. Aizen's just like, well, that's that.
I think that it probably has a lot to do with, like, the structure of the court guards that we've seen so far, in that they are not the most noble of organizations anyway, so I'm just like, well, I guess we are soldiers, and we do have a fucking job to do. Fine.
None of them say that, though. They're all just like, this is despicable. Well, the ends justify the means.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. Silence.
And Aizen's just like, well, I guess that we're done with that. It
would be great if fucking Aizen somehow released his hand just long enough to do the awkward turtle. And he's just like, so can we move along, or is someone going to put a rebuttal out there?
I think I would like it more if instead of there being that awkward silence and them saying, and then him saying, well, I guess that sails that. Instead, someone just goes, no, you're totally wrong, Captain. Oh, I guess that sails that, then.
Yeah, he just talks over them. Ruki is like, actually, Captain, I have a lot of moral dubiosities with this plan.
Okay, we're done now.
Everyone agreed with my big, smart plan.
So Aizen's like, okay, so can you let my arms go? Yeah, release the restraint. And Chizu's like, no, I can only use the three keys. Release your mouth, your left eye, and your ankles. And Aizen's like, fuck my ankles.
I like the idea that he actually has to, like, scoot around with his, like ankles. Like, that's how he moves around. Like, squicker, squicker, squicker.
I want to see, like, I want a shot of Aizen just, like, sitting in his chair. Coming up, or like he's lifted one foot so he can scratch his leg with his toe, and that's why his ankle was released.
Or the shot where he just breaks off his own ankle and like lifts it up to help free the rest of his body or something. You're just like, you gave him too much. You shouldn't have given him both ankles.
So Aizen says, all right, so you want me to get rid of all these things while I'm just sitting here? And Shinsu's like, well, yeah, you can do that, right? And Aizen's like, well, nah, I think that you're overestimating my abilities. And Jin's just like, well, I don't think...
You're Aizen. There's literally Aizen. No way we can overestimate your abilities.
I fucking hate the non-confrontational speech they keep having back and forth, where it's just like, I am the coolest. No, I am. No, I am. No, I am the coolest under pressure and the smarmiest. And essentially he says, oh, I'm sure that you won't just sit quietly and let those eyeball monsters eat you. Just, you know, look at them. Yeah. And so I was like, you sure are difficult to deal with. And Shinsui's like, I'm honored.
Like, are you shipping
just
them like
bold already?
Are you shipping them like I am now, Nick?
Oh, God. Jeez. So then Shinsui realizes what the fuck Aizen's going to do. He's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said all this while I'm standing literally 10 feet from him. Everybody get back in the lab. And Aizen uses Hado 90 Kurohitsugi, which is the thing that he used to take out Komamura, like, a billion years ago, I think. I think he also used it against Yamamoto? Whatever. It's his big, I am going to casually kill a bunch of stuff move, basically. So he uses it, and he smashes, like, everything, after everyone's ducked down inside the lab to safety. So Byakuya finally speaks up, and he's like, I am actually a ranking captain, so you can't just ignore my sentences so easily. So... I think that you're kind of insulting us by using his abilities. And Shinsu's like, yeah, I know. And you can smack me around all you want later for it. He doesn't say it like that.
He doesn't say it like he's fucking giving him bedroom eyes.
Yeah. Well, a bedroom eye. So long as Kubo remembers to draw that eye patch. So, yeah. Everyone's like, oh my god, that was kind of crazy awesome. And even all the debris has been cleared. And Urahara's like, he used it so awesomely, it's even stronger than when he fucked Kurosaki. Somehow he got even stronger while being detained in the Mukien prison. Maybe our prisons suck.
But yes. The chairs are fucking superb. Oh my god. The Soul Society should get out of
That's
the
whole... That's what Aizen says!
They need to get out of the business of saving souls and the whole balancing afterlife shit, and they need to go into just making chairs, because that is incredible.
Soul Society.
Yes. Oh, Nick, that pun. Mwah!
Ah. Yeah, and Aizen's just like, oh man, I blew this thing up with my Kurohitsugi, but... It's just still intact. So that's pretty awesome, isn't it? And Renji's like, he purposely aimed it at himself? Well, yeah, he wanted to break his restraint, you dumbass. Fucking duh.
Renji can't comprehend someone trying to do that. Tento agreed, that crazy!
So, Slyphon's like, okay, we have to destroy that canopy while those eyeball monsters are gone. And I was like, that is unnecessary. The gravity of Kuretsugi has created a fissure in the canopy. It's a highly dense mass of Reishi. Strike it once more with my spiritual pressure, and it will destroy itself. And then, like, this fucking gateway starts to appear, and everyone looks up at it, and Riki's like, no, the gate has got to be scattered. And I was like, we don't fucking need the gate anymore. There's a fucking hole in the sky around Ryokyu. So let's just go through there. Well, actually, what I'm going to do is instead bring the Royal Palace down to us. So I'm just going to fucking shoot it down. Yeah. Which is actually, you know, the eyes' way of going about things. Which, whatever, but... So like, there's a fucking hole, you idiots!
Stop being dumb, for once. I love this final panel, though. Because I can already see that this is going to become the panel that people take and write memes on for when Aizen does his bullshit. Because it's just, it's the perfect shot of him just being like, oh, yeah, he's like, oh, you thought you finally had a handle on Chad's powers? No, Aizen was behind it again. I was behind me being behind it the first time.
Oh, God. All right. So, yeah, it was a bleach chapter.
Alright, so let's go into Fairy Tail Chapter 427, Pitched Underground Battle. And our cover page is Max, and I don't know who Max is, so...
Neither do I.
There we go.
Like, I got money, you bastards. Yeah.
I'm like, are you one of the Blue Pegasus guys? I'm like, no. I guess he's... I vaguely recall him from the guild, but I don't remember him at all. So, maybe Max shows up this chapter. He doesn't, spoilers, but... I don't know. So... Natsu and group are heading into the facility, but Lucy stops them and is just like, hey, look, I know that you're super strong, but we should probably try to sneak in, do some espionage. We don't know really anything about this guild, so why don't we, you know, not be stupid about this? So she opens up Virgo, and Virgo is practicing self-bondage on herself.
Which is actually really fucking impressive. How did she tie the knot like that?
Look... I can understand self-bondage. I do not get how you tie your arms behind your back with that many, like, cinches to the fucking... Like, I don't get how you do that. I can comprehend some levels of self-bondage. That is a very impressive level. Or she just hires someone to tie her up, I guess, and just come back, hopefully.
There's other spirits, agents, celestial spirits.
If I were them, I wouldn't want to hang out with her. She's very weird.
Well, I mean, that's the joke whenever she shows up, isn't it?
Yes. For those of you who may not have remembered, this has been Virgo's joke for a while now, is that she is
a maid who wants to be punished.
Yeah, she's got an S&M kink. It was never as overt as it was now.
Oh my god, this fucking chapter.
Generally, it was just like, she'd do something bad, she'd be like, I hope Mistra doesn't punish me. This chapter was outright like...
I am into S&M. Yes. The bottom. It is so far out there.
Also, apparently the ropes weren't that bad because she just gets out of them immediately. But it's all for the purpose.
Lucy unties her.
Does she?
Yeah. Like, third panel on the page where she shows up, Lucy's untying her.
Oh, okay. There you go. I was going from the panel on the next page where she's still tied up to the next panel where she's not. So.
Well, yeah, that is a pretty fast transition.
Anyways... she has the ability to dig, so Lucy uses her star dress power and, you know, uses the Virgo form, which is, of course, a, you know, a French maid style outfit, but...
Which is skimpier than Virgo's.
Somehow. But I actually have no problem with that, because I'm like, look, this is, you know, par for the course of this new ability Lucy has. You know, she's going to dress up like her spirits, and one of them happens to be a French maid, so her having a French maid outfit, yeah, it is what it is. Right. But... They have to explain the power again, because they're like, look, people who saw it two chapters ago, they may not remember exactly what Lucy's power does. So they explain, you know, it allows her to use a bit of my powers while increasing her own magical power, which allows her to do something. I don't know. They show up in the prison. Like, I assume Lucy used the power to dig. I don't know why it would have been any different than if Virgo had just dug, and from the basis of Virgo also being there,
to wear the outfit.
I'm assuming Lucy had some hand in also digging the hole of some kind. Yeah. But they managed to get inside the prison, and Lucy's like, alright, good. Now let's covertly gather some info on Gray. And, of course, Nancy's like, Gray, where are you? I'm right here. It's me, Natsu. Right here in the prison. Right here.
I love Happy's reaction to this in the corner of that panel. Where he's, like, pulling his ears down to cover. Oh, God.
So...
fucking everyone hears him.
Everyone starts reacting to it. Lucy starts screaming at him, like, what are you fucking doing? Virgo's like, oh, you're punishing him? Well, why don't you punish me on this, I forget what they call them. Not Trojan horses. I think it's just wooden horse.
It's, high angle? No.
It's basically a sexual bondage tool of some kind. And Virgo is very happily like, ooh, please torture me on this. And Lucy's just like, shut up. Why are you this weird? I lost the one stellar spirit who I was kind of getting friendly with, and you left me with Leo and a bunch of freaks.
Well, I'm sure that they'll get back together, because then that'll be an excuse for Lucy to dress up like a mermaid, so, yeah.
Well, that would imply there's an ending of Fairy Tale that wasn't happy, so right. Can't have that. But Natsu's like, no, shut up, all of you weird people. I smell Gray. He's right here. And that's when Abel shows up, the little weird clown turban thing, whatever the fuck he is, from last chapter, a member of Avatar, and he's like, oh, something fun? Is it fun? And he has a little doll, which Lucy remembers as being the doll that, I guess, his name was Curse, I guess. I didn't remember his name from that long ago. But there was a member of Grimoire Heart that they fought. That had that doll. He fought Lucy, used his power to mostly just fan service control her, but he had an intense fight with her that she managed to just barely win because he used his doll to control her actions. So Lucy starts having like bad, bad vibes from it because she's like, I remember seeing that before. Virgo's like, everyone, take care. He's stronger than you think. And then Natsu just fucking, I don't even know what he does because his hand's just raised up above him. And then the next panel, the dude's been fucking knocked into the ground, so I guess he just fucking, like, karate chops him, like, 2-inch karate chops the fucking dude into the ground and beats him.
I'm pretty sure that is what happened, so.
Not only does he beat him, he hits him so goddamn hard he knocks his fucking face paint off. Because he doesn't have it in the next panel we see him. And Natsu's just like, sorry, but I really don't give a fuck about anyone in this guild who's not Gray. So then another member of the guild shows up. It's the kind of old kimono-wearing guy. And he's like, oh, trouble is a-brewing now. Intruders, you think you can win, but you have not faced my punishment. And he summons all these torture items, which, of course, Virgo is looking at starry-eyed for, which is really, really unnerving, because I get S&M. I get bondage. These are not bondage tools. There's a candle. There's a hammer.
Most of them aren't bondage. There's a cat of nine tails in there.
There's pliers. She's not into S&M, I think, Nick. I think she's just into being mutilated. Like, I think she's into just, like, whatever happened in the hostel movie, she's like, oh, I wish that would happen to me. Because there's shit in here that I'd be like, I don't want that anywhere near my body in any sexual manner. That's terrifying. But he also throws the Spanish dragon at them. I guess that's what he calls it. I've never heard that phrase, but maybe that is what they're called. Natsu stops it with his foot, and he's like, you call this a dragon? And he's like, no, it's a Trojan horse. Okay, maybe that is the name, Trojan horse. There. Then he summons an Iron Maiden to trap Natsu in, and Natsu gets crushed, but the Iron Maiden looks like it's actually crying, but instead, it's Natsu melting out of it, and the dude's eye opens when this happens, and he's got, like, super anime eyes. Like, essentially, it's like Brock opened his eyes and it's just like the most desu eyes possible. And before Natsu can beat him, he's just like, amnesty! And Natsu punches his face off. At which point, he's like, two down! And then Robot Guy shows up with his shining eye, and Natsu kicks him in the face and knocks him out, and he's like, that makes three! And, Virgo's like, wow, he's awesome! But
Chris.
Then, yes.
I want to retract my earlier prediction that this would be a more serious arc.
No, don't worry, Nick. There's still four members of this guild left. It's going to be epic fights.
For Natsu to also raffle some.
But the voice calls out from the top of the stairs and says, "He's out of your league. I'll take him down. It's Gray." And Natsu faces down with him. He's like, "Yo, you've been doing good." So Natsu and Gray are set to square off, Nick.
Yep.
Look, I don't have a problem with Natsu clowning these three guys. It's fine. I find it amusing. The only thing I think is weird is, like, if they were, that was the intention, why did we spend last week even getting to know them? Like, why didn't she just introduce us to the designs and then kick their ass? Like, why did we need this week to get to kind of know them? But, yeah, otherwise, it's fine. I'm more curious to see how this development goes, and I'd be fine if this isn't a long arc. I kind of want Fairy Tail to start moving at a point of something more interesting, so.
Right.
It's all good.
Okay. Let's do Food Wars, Chapter 113, Forgotten Vegetables. So it is time for the last day of the pre-opening of Shinomiya's Tokyo restaurant. Everyone is racing around preparing stuff. There's photographers taking pictures and stuff. There's customers applauding.
Yeah, people do
they're
that.
Not in the kitchen.
They're just like, yeah, I got food.
Faster, yeah.
These mozzarella sticks, mwah.
So you know, Soma's racing around along with everybody else, you know, helping get stuff together and helping with preparation and putting the food out. He stops when one of the waiters leaves empty plates in the kitchen and kind of like licks some of the sauce up. And he's like, "Oh my god, it's so good!
Made my knees buckle."
Sexual as Fairy Tail. Soma flashes back to when Abel was instructing him on various stuff, and Soma basically observed it's really, really different. French cooking, rather, is really, really different from traditional Japanese cooking. Abel's like, "Well, yeah, it is, because traditional Japanese cooking tends to handle ingredients very sparingly, leaving them as close to their raw, natural state as possible, whereas French cooking is on the other end of the spectrum, investing large chunks of time and effort into a maximum of processing." So, it's just important to note they're very, 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 very different. Then Soma looks over at Shinomiya while still in the flashback. He's like, "So why did Chef Shinomiya decide to take up French cooking in the first place?" Because, you know, he is Japanese, and so he's like, "You know, I grew up in a family restaurant, so of course that's why I decided to master that style." Back in the present, they're still preparing stuff. Things seem to be winding down, and some guy with a pencil mustache, it's like a shady pencil mustache too, is like, "Shinomiya, do you have plans to open a third restaurant yet?" And he's like, "Oh no, I haven't thought that far ahead. You know, I'm only just finishing the pre-opening for my second." "Oh, but I'm sure it will be a success. I would gladly sponsor you."
Nick, I hate this character now. I think he's behind a lot of evil in this world.
Now that I've given him that voice, you hate him.
No, I'm just like, Nick, this guy's up to something. He's behind something. Is there an evil plot going on in the background of Shigeki no Seiyomu? Because I think it's this guy.
He's gonna form like a Legion of Doom with Matsuoka.
It's like the lamest Legion of Doom ever. They're just like, "What are our plans today?
We're gonna work out and sweat a lot.
I'm gonna drop a bunch of salt in this food. Oh, that's devilish."
Devilish. Anyway. So Shinomiya notes, "Why are you closing down so early on this last day of your pre-opening?" Shinomiya says, "Actually, we aren't. I've invited one more very special group of guests. And it's all of Shinomiya's old classmates from the academy, most of whose names I do not remember. So, sorry about that." But everyone's there is like, "Hi, Shinomiya, how are you doing?" And, God, I should know her name because she's shown up actually quite a bit. The girl with the ponytail is like, "Why didn't you ask me to help you out? Instead, you got Yuki here to come here." And it's like, "You have your own restaurant to run, you idiot." Which, that explains it, doesn't it? Yeah. And also one of Shinomiya's old teachers is there, and he congratulates Shinomiya on his opening and says, "You were always an energetic student full of vitality, but a decade ago there was a touch of instability to you. I see no signs of that now. I'm proud you set to say you were one of my students, and I hope you will continue to make great strides in your career." So basically the whole thing where Shinomiya was actually competing against Soma way back near the beginning of the series, where they were like, you have stagnated and you're not really pushing yourself anymore, that's gone, and Shinomiya is on his feet again, so he's more goody now. And then he welcomes a woman whom he rejects as madam, and she's like, don't you mess with your old lady like that! I'm your mother, Kojiro! Don't call me that!
I don't know if that's quite the accent she has.
Well, no, she's got... I assume this is supposed to be like a Kansai accent, because she's like, why you gotta be such a pushy child? We see hide nor hair of you for ages, and then out the blue you tell me to get up on to Tokyo?
Well, the first one sounded a little bit more urban, and I was like, wait, hold on, am I missing something here? Like, yeah, no, she's from inner city Baltimore, didn't you? Pretty sure she mentioned that.
But, so Shinomiya is just, like, being talking very animatedly with his mother, who is, like, scolding him, kind of, and Abel's like, they're talking the same language as us, right? Because, ha ha, different regions of Japan sound so different. Ha ha. Yeah.
Well, I do find it funny that, like, you know, it's that thing of, like, when people come back to their family, you know, they suddenly return back to an accent or something like that. Like, he when he's talking to his mom, he suddenly stops being this, like, prim and proper dude. He's like, oh, come on, Ma, won't you relax a little?
My dad is actually the same way, because he, you know, grew up to Southern parents. And so, normally, he's very, like, I guess... How would you say it? Like, he's very deliberate almost in the way he speaks. But then when he, you know, talks to his parents, he's just like, hi, mama, hi, daddy. And it starts slipping more and more into it as he goes along. It's something that everyone does, but it is kind of weird to see that. It's also nice to, I also like just the idea of, you know, seeing your employer talking with their family and seeing a completely different side of them. Because Shinomiya is not being all authoritarian and stuff for right. once. So, yeah. So, all the co-workers and stuff eat, and Shinomiya's mother is like, it sure is good. And Soma finally says to Shinomiya, why did you decide to pursue French cooking? And we basically get, like, the Ratatouille flashback. I'm sure it's just because of the French cuisine connection, but that's what this reminded me of. Where
I've never seen Ratatouille.
It's, well, like, the just the one scene is, like, the number one reason to watch it, basically. Basically, Shinomiya, like...
I'm not comfortable with talking rats making food, Nick. I'm not going to watch that movie.
Shinomiya basically thinks, you know, when I was starting up in elementary school, it was to celebrate, my family went out to a little... local French restaurant, and we weren't rich, so we saved for weeks and put on our best clothes for the occasion. We even practiced how to use a knife and fork properly. Looking back on it now, it wasn't a very impressive restaurant. And he remembers, like, talking with his mother and her saying, isn't this yummy? French food is really wonderful. I don't think I've ever ate something so good my whole life. And Kojiro was happy, and his mother was happy. He just thought to himself, if I grow up to be a French cook, then maybe I can make Ma smile every day. And so Shinomiya comes back to the present. He looks at Soma and says, who says I gotta tell you that?
He's like, I have a beautiful story, not giving you info about it.
But he does kind of throw Soma a bit of a bone, where he says, hey, remember that quiche I made on your first day? Yeah, what about it? Well, see, apparently, Westerners only see burdock plants as weeds. I talked to a lot of people who were surprised that Japanese people eat bush roots. During World War II, European soldiers that had been taken as Japanese POWs were given burdock root in their meals. So when the war was over, they appealed to the international court saying the Japanese abused their prisoners by making them eat bush roots. So, yeah, basically, all these different root things and stuff, Westerners associate them with stuff that was only available to eat during the war. And vegetables have been out of favor in European cuisine for decades. Those vegetables have been. So he calls them, like, légumes. I don't speak French. Légumes oubliés, the forgotten vegetables. So my dish would have been quiche de légumes oubliés. And I'm sure someone's going to say that's
how. Oh, man, I want to get Benzai on this show now, just so he can come in and be
that's
like,
what are you saying, man?
What are you doing? You're not even getting it right. I ate Taco Bell 4 years ago, and I still am pooping my brains out.
This would be like, Renzo, you realize what you're saying is like not how any French person speaks English, right?
No, you're the stupid one.
Anyone talks, everyone I have to talk to you think that my accent is perfectly normal.
Benzo's gonna like message me on Twitter like, I heard you guys are being mean to me on your podcast. I'm like, no, he's not gonna do that, because that would imply Benzo has like the time to give a fuck about something this small.
I'm doing fucking French television.
He's like the French Brad Pitt, and he's just like, I don't give a fuck, I'm not showing up on your podcast so you can butcher my accent.
Who cares about your stupid podcast?
Hey, Benzo, do you want to show up and talk about rookies? Do I?
We're gonna talk about Berserk. Oh my god! But wait!
Oh, God. So, anyway, Shinomiya finishes up talking about all this stuff, and he says, I love how they actually got to this. I have no idea if this pun was in Japanese, too, but he says, I decided to open a second restaurant in Japan because I needed to take myself and my cooking back to my roots. That's amazing.
It is very appropriate.
So he says, you know, I came back to take one more good, hard look at the cooking of my homeland. That's what both I and my restaurant need most in order to earn that third star. So, I like this whole thing. You know, they play up the tremendous contrast between Japanese and French cuisines, and Shinomiya discovering this marriage between the two of them, and that's why that's what makes his cooking so special, basically. So, I like that. And anyway, someone then says, you're going to have that new recipe contest tonight. Well, I want to make a dish for that. And everyone's like, what the fuck did you find? Is it Susie? I've forgotten her name. Anyway. Lucy. That was her name. She's like, when the fuck did you find time to work on a recipe? And he's like, well, I always intended to do this.
He's like, I had the idea to do this quiche made of vegetables.
Called Quiche de Legume Forgotten.
De la vegetables no one eats.
Anyway, he says, you know, I've been putting together this image in my head, and I want to make that image reality as soon as I can, as he, like, undoes the buttons on his sleeves so he can roll them up. And Shinomiya says, ah, you think you can put together a quality dish? Yes. All right, well, this will be the first time I'll get to taste one of your recipes. All right, you can do it, but don't come whining to me if this new sense of confidence of yours gets crushed. And there's a sound effect that goes, ooh.
Dun 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 dun.
What do you think of the chapter, Chris?
I like this chapter a lot. I like the flashback. It's such a simple one. Like, it's not like it's, you know, highly detailed. Kid goes to a restaurant, didn't have a whole lot. Eat something fancy. His mom smiles. He wants to make his mom happy, and that's, you know, why he pursued the way he did. But it's just effective to kind of give this kind of character something, and it's just, I don't know, the way it's presented is just, it's sweet enough that I'm like, oh, this is nice. I don't know, there's just a way that Shogeki no Soma, manages to tell these small stories so powerfully. Like, these stories that make such a connection to food that you're just like, oh, yeah, I kind of do want to have more, like, food-related memories and things like that. Like, I want to share more, like, family dinners where, you know, something cool happens. Just, I don't know, very nice.
It's also interesting how you get all these examples of, you know, these kids at this boarding school, basically, but a lot of their motivation comes from their families who, you know, by their nature, don't show up incredibly often. So, you know, Soma is driven by a kind of rivalry with his dad. And then you get, you know, Shinomiya with his mother. And I think Megumi even had a little bit of backstory that involved her mother. And Hayama has the sort of familiar relationship with his teacher. And there's also the kind of familial bond between Kurokiba and Alice. So, yeah.
Yeah, it all connects with family, and I like that a lot. It's one of the strongest aspects of the series. We mentioned it last week. I'm excited to see what Soma's gained from this and what he has found. I think is the character I'm most interested in. I'm really... My Kindle is completely shit on right now. I can't download anything, but the moment I can get that fixed up and back, my goal is to get all the other volumes that I haven't gotten yet and try to catch up on the story.
So you can know what stuff I'm referencing whenever, yeah. I catch you up to speed on who characters
are. Yeah, I'm just like, Nick, who are those eight characters who showed up today?
Well, they were judges at the one contest, and they've shown up since then, and that girl with the ponytail was a teacher, and that is when Soma first had his rivalry with his Italian friend, whose name I also don't remember. Anyway, yeah. Okay, so, we are going to move on now to Gakuhote.
Yes.
Krish, go ahead and do your whole thing.
Yeah, well...
I do something special today.
Yes. If you don't know, we had mentioned it a couple weeks now, but Gakuhotai has not been faring very well in the rankings in Japan. It's been in the bottom five pretty consistently at this point, and we've been mentioning, like, it's a possibility this series may not have long. And in case there was any doubt in our minds about that, this chapter effectively made that clear. It's titled The Beginning of the End. It involves the pinnacle case that this entire series has been based around. It introduces us to the last mystery character waiting to see. Everything is leading up to this being the final case of the series and being its end. So this is a sad thing to see. We don't like to see series we like go, but we wanted to kind of send it out. And everyone who's been listening to Weekly Manga Recap for the past few months we've had the series know that I like playing this Phoenix Wright music stuff in the background, so I'm still going to do that. But in addition, we are going to try to live out these last few chapters the best way we can, and we're actually going to completely voice act and read the entire Gakuhotai chapters.
If you were sick of Gakuhotai lasting 30 minutes each recap,
get
buckle
ready.
Yourselves in.
If you're that one dude who's like, I hate Phoenix Wright and fucking Gakuhotai, well, I'm sorry. You got nothing out of this. Just know we only got like 4 more weeks, probably.
Something under that realm.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's chapter 17, The Beginning of the End. We begin in Tokyo Public Prosecutor's Office, Children's Division Special Investigations Unit.
6 times already, just in this one semester!
That's quite a lot.
It comes out to a classroom session every other week!
That's a weird fucking kid.
Yeah, puberty.
An elite unit made up of only the best and brightest grade school and middle school prosecutors from across the land.
The teacher is Akane Akimoto. It's her first homeroom assignment. Perhaps she lacks leadership abilities.
The lead prosecutor there is Hanzuki's precious daughter. Heh.
Well, that explains it.
I wonder. I have a different theory. Five students have transferred into Tenbin Class 6-3 this year. One is that prosecutor, 2 are attorneys, 1 is that Mr. Mole, and lastly, Tento Nanahoshi, age 12.
Wasn't he the suspect in the Suzuki murder and dismemberment case?
Yes, but he was found innocent then. What's concerning is that not a single piece of data about him exists from his time prior to arrival at Tenbin Elementary this spring.
That is odd! We're unable to find anything. Does that mean someone's gone and erased it?
No way!
That takes state level.
Tento Nanahoshi, just who are you?
We cut to Ibaku's house, which is like the first time we've seen this. And let's see.
You actually did the sound effects? Birds! Alright, now you have to play as overalls.
I did do the overalls. I snapped my fingers for the snapping of overalls.
I'll be clomp. I guess that's him leaving the house. Slam!
Let's see here. Okay, next page. Friday, July 9th, 7:40 a.m.
Oh, Tanto sleepy.
Tento Nanahoshi arrives at school. Time minus 27 minutes, 35 seconds.
Rabbits eat carrot food because they're rabbits!
That's completely inaccurate.
Tento make the rabbits not die with food in their belly. Oh! Rabbit run away! No! Ooh, must prevent secondary damage. Whatever secondary mean, Tento not too smart on numbers. Come back, rabbit friend! I feel like if I don't catch you, murder will happen! Oh, Tento finally caught you. What was that sound? I told you, there no freedom, even if you're not in a cage. That's what Tento Dad say every time he lock him in closet.
Nanahoshi?
Oh, Aaron, and name I can't pronounce.
7:51 a.m. Irene and Hatakeyama run into Tento.
Oh, she crying.
What the fuck is shup sound effect?
I guess it's her hair twisting.
Nanahoshi, yank. Don't you dare tell anyone you saw us here. Got it?
Yes, ma'am. Is bad time to mention Tento kind of aroused?
Let's go, Irie.
Okay.
Oh, she's so scary. Oh, but I wonder what's up with Pretty Lady. Oh, Rabbit's gone again!
Despite seeming like every other morning, one strange thing after another kept happening. I think it's Tento narrating this part, though.
Oh. If I just caught on to it sooner, maybe we could have avoided that particular end result.
Thud. 8.02 a.m. That's you.
Ow. It's not even a lie.
Yo.
Yo.
No. He's fucking Killer Bee.
I gotta find ways to rhyme his lines now.
Walking and playing DS. Can't say I approve.
Want to add that to the rules, too? You can't stop me from playing games, fool.
I applaud your quick thoughts.
I got a character change. Kinugami and Higashide arrive at school.
What the? It's pretty rowdy over by the courtyard.
You're late, Pubigami! Come with me and hurry!
Pineapple?
I want some Snapple. I'm gonna drop that. He's got too many lines for me to drop that.
What's the Snapple?
The animal shed? What the heck's going on?
Yo! Inagami! What up?
No, he does the rhymes, okay.
See there? It looks like someone's fallen over! And it looks like she's got a great ass! Oh, wait, hold on. No, he's Al Pacino. See there? It looks like someone's fallen over, and she's got a great ass!
I was so put off when I saw that panel, like, the second time going through. I'm just like, why are they focused on her butt?
Like, it looks like that's what he's pointing to. Look at that! Twinkle, twinkle, butthole. Why is that the important factor?
Now, Baku's like, the face is covered by hay and is invisible. But are those a female student's legs? I like how it's like, yeah, close up on her butt, and just like, are those a girl's legs? He's not even looking at the butt, so why are we looking at the butt?
The door is locked, so we can't get inside! Where's the key?
We looked for it, but it's not in the faculty room, so someone must have it.
Grr! I'm one of Class 6-2's creature capers!
Shut up, NPC!
Oh, but I have important details to tell you! Each class's crew cleans the shed in rotation, and this morning was 6-3's turn, so I bet one of them has to have the key.
Creature keepers, that would be Nanahoshi and Shiratori.
Is this like Doflamingo as a kid?
Well, no, I'm trying to channel Kaiba, but I don't have a very good Kaiba voice.
I don't think I have one either. Oh, yeah. Let me see if it... Nah, that just makes me think Evil Brock, and then I can't do it.
Creature keepers. That would be Nanahoshi and Shiratori. I guess that one's closer to it. I don't know.
Hey, that there on the floor. Ain't that blood?
It's true! Yikes!
In that case, I'll force.
Hold it, Higashide. The circumstances make it highly likely it's one of those incidents. In which case, breaking the lock will be bad. It's fucking Aquaman telepathy that he does. I know it's because he goes...
But it seriously goes out in fucking sonar waves. Ibaku becomes Aquaman. What the hell?
It reminds me of,
Come, my ninja friends.
Like, he's just like, Avengers assemble! And fucking, like, what's his name? Shiratori shows up, and he's just like, oh, good, everybody's here.
Yeah, Shiratori's the girl. Sarutobi is
the girl. Sarutobi, that's it.
Anyway. Sarutobi shows up. Dash through the trees and shit. Yeah.
Ibaku! Waited long! That's not a Naruto. Damn, I can't do Naruto like fucking Smoker Naruto from the dub. I'm trying to think, how do you get that? That's too gravelly for me. That might have to be you.
What, do a Smoker Naruto?
Do you ever watch the dub Naruto?
I can't do that voice. It's too high pitch for me.
I feel like then it should be in my wheelhouse then. I don't know. Fuck it, he's some other kind of ninja then. Is another ninja with a distinct voice?
You could just do horribly racist Japanese.
Oh, Ibaku! Have you been waiting around?
Only about 5 seconds. Looking at that butt again.
Oh, what a fanny. I've taken it in. Is it a you nor her?
Not completely sure.
Permission to fire granted under classroom session rules, Article 19.
And he pulls out a fucking fold-out laser gun and points it at the door.
Oh, ninja art, a Manroot slash!
Manroot?
Manroot slash!
Moonlight! It's
a moonerate!
Hey.
Neem!
Pocket 6 gun. Bazooka mode! And so Ibaku fucking shoots a bazooka at the door, and Sarutobi also slashes it. But they can't damage that lock.
They're like, we can't damage lock, but we'll explode the rest of the building, I guess.
The
Pocket 6 Gun, a 6-level transforming weapon said to be provided to prosecutors and attorneys for self-protection. So the rumors were true.
Minus 47 seconds. Over there! You're kidding, right? Wrestle, sweep, sweep. Minus 12 seconds. Please let me be wrong. Minus 5 seconds. It can't be! Turn over.
Bleed, bleed, bleed.
No! Says someone, maybe a girl. I guess that's Pine actually doing that.
No!
8:07:54 a.m. Reiko Shiratori is discovered. Bum, 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 bum. Call an ambulance.
Roar.
Red Ogre. This week's topic. The Reiko Shiratori attempted murder case. I fucking love this. Seriously, first time I turned to that page, I thought, oh my god, they fucking killed a little girl. And it was like, no, she's fine.
Like, well, we can't do that. We did as close as possible.
Or like the very obvious, it's her corpse shot, and then immediately it's like, no, she has a pulse, and it says attempted murder on the floor. And it's just like immediately turns from terrifying to fucking hilarious. Oh, god.
I think this is Ibaku talking.
So it looks like she was hit in the back of the head with a blunt object. There's not much bleeding, but she's yet to regain consciousness. The problem is where we found Shiratori. There are no tears in the wire mesh anywhere, and the door, the only way in or out, was locked from the inside.
BAM!
This is a locked room murder case!
Except he's not dead. It's attempted murder.
Oh, come on, man. What do you guys got on my... Why you gotta ruin my jam, yo?
It's what I do's.
How did the perp transport the bludgeon Shiratori into this locked room? Or did the perp bludgeon her inside, then create a locked room setting afterwards from outside?
I think there could be a much simpler explanation.
You mean?
Hey guys, what's going on? All of you together, and I thought I heard what sounded like sirens too.
I have a bunny.
This bunny's butt is soft.
And it has a scar.
It's a cool bunny. It's been through trials and tribulations, but it's learned and grown. It's the anti-hero of bunnies.
Tento, what's with that rabbit?
Oh, he always trying to escape. Oh, but you can never escape fate, young friend. You will be in that cage until you die.
And the key, you don't happen to have the key to the animal shed, do you?
Oh, yes. Tento tried to eat it, but it is still in his pocket. How'd you know? Huh? What is it? What's you about? Don't tell me there was secondary damage because I hadn't locked it up.
Nanahoshi, here, wear my backpack.
What?
Huh? What's happening to Tento?
Backpack manacle, angel's wings.
I fucking love this. It's got a special backpack that he uses to bind people.
Cinch. At 8:20 a.m. for the attempted murder of Reiko Shiratori, plus suspicion of involvement in a series of incidents attributed to the Red Ogre.
...
Tento, Nanahoshi, I hereby place you under arrest!
Bam! Dramatic badge reveal. Understood. Beep. That was Mr. Mole, the undercover officer. There's been a bodily injury incident involving Tenbin Class 6-3.
The suspect is Tento Nanahoshi.
That class again?
This is the seventh one!
But a bodily injury incident makes it Class A!
That's our Special Investigations Unit purview, but... I shan't let anyone else take this. That one's my prey.
Looks like it'd be best not to interfere if you value your life. So let's entrust this to her, the torturing prosecutor. Or rather, my personal wet dream. I mean, the last of the three tongues, Yui Kijima.
Fetish-tastic 12-year-old. Since fairy tale, basically. She's fucking wearing leather short shorts.
And a leather bustier and a choker.
That's a fucking corset, man.
Corset. And because she's 12, she is not carrying around a dominatrix whip, but a jump rope.
Oh, God. So fucking blatantly Francisca Von Karma, but 12.
I almost wish, because I used fucking their music last week for Raichi Papa, so I had to think of a new theme song for it, but I think I found one that fits, because she's supposed to be more evil than Fairy Karma, right. So I went with something a bit more evil for her. Oh, that was fun.
It was fun. I was worried that would not go over well, but yeah, I had a good time anyway. So.
Oh, that was good. I'm going to miss Gakkyo Hotai as it's ending, but god damn it, we're going to have fun with it on the way out.
Milk this for all it's worth.
The fucking sound effects got voice.
I just kind of did that like on a whim, and then I was just like, oh, we're sitting on my desk, I can use this fully. And we just, I was like, fuck it, bam.
Like next week we're just gonna have to start, like, we're gonna have to get like pig guts, so like when blood sound effects come in we just like
oh god. Let's move on to My Hero Academia now. Badass fucking 2-page spread to start this off. That is an awesome color page.
It is. It's very cool. Epic. All the right ways.
I love how Midoriya, his bandages on his fingers are just part of his outfit now. He keeps breaking his fingers so much.
He's just like, I hurt myself today again.
Well, yeah, it's all about Todoroki. I almost said it. Gakkyo Hotei character instead. It's all about Todoroki getting ready to face up against Midoriya in this chapter, although we do have to wind down from the last fight between Uraraka and Bakugo. So, Midoriya is thinking to himself about how, you know, Uraraka wanted to meet him in the finals, and so he's kind of like, oh, she lost. Uraraka has to be basically carted off of the field, not because she's really hurt, but because she's fucking exhausted. One of the announcers is like, oh, she lost in the first round. The other one's like, ah, why are you such a terrible announcer? Come on. And they're like, okay, well, the first round's over, so we'll take a quick break, and then the second round, although the first round technically isn't over, as we find out later. So Midoriya spots Bakugo coming the other way as they, you know, go through
cleaning room hallways and stuff. And so it's like, oh, I'm gonna go to the prep room, so congratulations on your winning. Bye! And Bucky's like, you suggested that tactic, didn't you? Your fucking self-sacrificing bullshit, didn't you? You sure caused me a lot of trouble. And Midori really quickly cuts him off and says, no, Uraraka came up with everything just to beat you. So if it really was a lot of trouble for you, that was Uraraka messing with you. Wanted to give credit to his friend. So. Everyone gives Bakugo kind of a hard time as he rejoins them in the stands. And everyone's like, man, you sure are good at being the bad guy, Bakugo. He's like, shut up! Oh, good job beating up that little girl. I mean, not like me. I held back against my opponent. And immediately Sugi is like, you lost, Kamiyama.
You fucking lost, douchebag.
And Bakugo just settles down with a, there's nothing frail about her. Cut to backstage, and Midoriya meets up with Uraraka, and she's like, oh, I lost, I guess. And so he's like, are you hurt? No, I'm fine. You know, I'm healing bit by bit, so my stamina doesn't get drained. You know, I just got a few scrapes here and there, but, oh, man, Baku's so strong, and I could beat him. I guess I just gotta try harder next time. And Midoriya says, are you sure you're okay? Yeah, I'm fine. You know, you're Deku, you're always looking on to the next challenge. I lost, but I don't want to lose again. And Midoriya gets ready to say something in response to that, but announcement goes over the speakers. Oh, Kirihira and Tetsu Tetsu, who's going to move on? And they're fucking arm wrestling. Like, the comment that the announcer made was just like, I guess we'll sell this with arm wrestling later, or something.
Yeah, like, I guess we'll figure it with arm wrestling or some bullshit. And they were just like, we couldn't figure out something else, so yeah, just arm wrestle.
So Kirishima, after a brief struggle, manages to pin Tetsu Tetsu's hand down, and so he wins, and afterwards, just glinting manliness surrounds both their faces as he extends his hand. I was like, yo, that was a good match! And it's like, alright, we've got the full lineup now for the second round, let's go! And so Midori is basically being called away, and Uraraka's like, oh, I'm sorry, come on, you just already wasted all your prep time talking to me, so, good luck out there. And Midoriya walks off, and after he leaves, Uraraka takes out her cell phone and talks to her dad. And she says, I'm sorry I missed your call earlier. And he says, no, it's okay. I know you were busy. And your mom and I saw the whole thing on TV. You were so great. I'm sorry you lost. And Uraraka's like, no. It wasn't close. I wasn't great. I just panicked. And the last ditch move I did, I completely screwed myself. And her dad's just like, really? I don't know anything about that technical stuff. But just because you lost doesn't mean you're done. There's always next year. And I was like, yeah, but it only matters if you win. The scouts can't learn anything from me losing a match. Well, yeah, but what's the rush? And Uraraka starts to cry, and just like, I have to for you and Mom. And he says, don't go crazy over us. Either way, I know my kind little Ochako is gonna be a great hero someday. And it's like, stop crying! You have the most sympathy-evoking face with your giant curly eyebrows. Poor girl, sad.
Stop being sad.
Oh, I'm sad that you're sad. Midoriya seems to have overheard all of this, and so he's like, oh, of course she's broken up over it. Why wouldn't she be? And I said I wanted to return the favor, but in the end I couldn't help her at all. But still, she wished me luck. So while I march on, I'm just going to... all I can do is strut that forward, basically. But as he starts to head down the hallway, he runs into Endeavor! And Midoriya's eyes bulge out really big, and Endeavor is like, oh, hello, that's an amazing quirk you have there. You made all that force with your little finger and stuff, and in terms of power, it seems on par with All Might's quirk. And Midoriya's like, oh god, does he know? No, of course he doesn't know. What am I thinking of? I have to go, bye. And Endeavor says, my boy Shoto, he has a duty to surpass All Might. His match against you will prove a valuable test. And then his speech bubbles lose their super outlines. It's like, so give me your all, put up a good fight against him, though.
He's become suddenly gay?
Well, he is flaming.
Oh, wow, Nick. Have you been sane on that one?
No, I just...
You're on fucking fire today, man. I feel like
you need... Endeavor.
You need to go up on stage.
Make fire puns.
You need to go up on stage or something, because your wordplay today is incredible.
Oh god. So anyway, Endeavor says, give it your all and put up a good fight against him. But
of course, Midori remembers what Todoroki said to him, where he's like, you know, I'm going to rise to the top without using his, you know, quirk. And it never... It basically leaves Midoriya to head out to the ring, but Midoriya stops him by saying, I'm not All Might. And he's like, well, no, of course you're not. Of course I'm not. Right. And Todoroki isn't you. And big old full page split down the middle so that they're just glaring at each other over their shoulders. Which, God, Midoriya looks so young in comparison, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I don't really think about that too often, but he's got a fucking baby face when you put him next to Flame Beard over there. Yeesh. Anyway, so it's time for the showdown between Todoroki and Midoriya, and they just basically stare off, get some hype from the announcers, and then the match starts, and that's where the chapter ends. So, looking forward to this?
Yes, I am. This was a really good chapter, because this is essentially a follow-up chapter to last week, where we got that characterization with Uraraka. And I love seeing what we know about her this chapter. I don't know if it's something that maybe we've heard about before, but from this chapter, you get the impression this is a girl who puts a lot of pressure on herself, because almost the entire conversation she has with her parents, you know, they're supportive, but she keeps taking away all their compliments. Like, no, it really wasn't a good match. I kind of threw it all at the end. It didn't really work out. They're like, well, at least she still did good. She's like, well, it really doesn't matter if I did good, because all that matters is impressing the scouts, and I can't really do that off of one loss. But they're still supporting her, and clearly she puts a lot of weight in herself, as you see her kind of breaking up as they're just so proud of her regardless of it. So she's really establishing herself as this character that's just compelling. You really want to see things kind of work out for her, which is the best possible result you can get out of a battle tournament. If you get the chance to develop other characters beyond just the one or two main ones who are supposed to be kind of like the highlights to the tournament. You know, if you can do that, you're in a good place. The thing that's a bit strange to me, though, and this is just maybe from my context of how this entire contest has been set up, I feel it's sort of weird that we're getting Todoroki versus Deku.
Midoriya.
I just can't say it. I don't know why. It's like fucking, it's impossible to me. I don't know what we're getting that now. Like, I know why we are, obviously, you know, the matchup at the tournament. But it feels like that would have been what you want narratively to be the finale of the tournament. Because it feels like he's like the antagonist of this, or at least the rival character of this. But I'm guessing he'll be fighting Bakugo at the end.
Yeah, what if this is like build up for Bakugo to actually finally get one over on Midoriya?
Yeah, or something like that. Or, you know, we couldn't even be in for a twist. Maybe Todoroki wins and beats Deku and he goes on to fight him. But the thing that just interests me is, as I perceive it now, it's almost like, it'd be like if in the Battle City tournament, Yugi fought Merrick and then fought Kaiba. Where you're just like, well, isn't like the big enemy the one you want to fight last? It's just a bit strange to me, but I'm kind of curious to see how this plays out.
The thing about that is that there is no actual antagonist
in
this tournament, because...
There's no villain, they're all heroes. Right. It's just, this is the character who's been built up, I think, most strong as the
central figure. I agree that there are the most stakes to the match because of Endeavor's involvement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how things turn out, I guess.
Yeah, I'm liking it a lot, and very interested to see next week. I want to see what we kind of get in a big fight, because we haven't gotten a fight yet since this series kind of came back to the magazine.
Yeah. It's all been very quick stuff. Okay, so let's move on to One Piece. Chapter 782, Champion of Evil.
I don't really get to do Doflamingo this week, because Doflamingo doesn't talk.
Well, he talks at the beginning, but basically...
It's nothing compelling, though. He's just like, I'm going to break ahead.
Surprising enough, it's a treble chapter, yeah. Doflamingo tried to crush Law last chapter just by stepping on him, stomping on him, and Luffy intercepted his foot. And so this chapter opens up with Doflamingo. I love this line. It's like, why'd you stop me? I was just going to split Law's skull. That's all!
Why'd you stop me? I was just going to pick up this dollar. Like he just says it so casually. Like, what's, you know, why are you, come on, let me just break this, your friend's head open.
And they both use arm and hockey on their feet as Luffy once again intercepts Doflamingo's foot, this time by kicking his ankle and deflecting it.
And Triple freaks out to see this because this tremendous shockwave gets sent out across the plateau. It's like, oh my god, it's a collision of Supreme King Haki! Does he have that too? And yeah. So Treble flashes back to when he encountered Doflamingo when he demonstrated his Haki as a kid. He was like, oh my gosh, you have color of the Supreme King Haki. It's a sign that you have the quality of a king, Doflamingo. You are chosen by the heavens. A real man tests himself. Do you desire to kill anyone? I will give you the power of vengeance. And he presented him with a pistol and a devil fruit, presumably the string fruit. And Doflamingo's just like, people I want to kill? There are loads of them. So, Turbo goes on this. Actually, God. Doflamingo sounds so fucking terrifying after this speech. Because Turbo is just like, there's no way you can match up to him. He's different. He's on another level. His birth infused him with madness. His fate brought him rage. These things solidified him as a demon. Ah! He's scary, Chris.
He's making me poop myself.
Luffy and Doflamingo exchange kicks back and forth for a bit. Luffy trying to land a blow. He does eventually land a blow to Doflamingo's stomach. And
actually,
then,
it's like kind of a series of him getting the better of Doflamingo.
Because Doflamingo's completely on the defensive at the start, yeah. And Luffy's just so fast, and he ends up kicking him in the ribs, and then just fucking socks him across the jaw, and then uppercuts his ass, and then uses Gum Gum Eagle Bazooka, which I don't know if you've actually seen that one before.
That'll be a new one.
Finally, Doflamingo manages to strike back using... He just calls it Athlete.
Yeah, I was listening to the Jump podcast, and they explained it. In Japanese, it's a pun, kind of like Zoro's moves. Athlete in Japanese is Athlito, and Ito. Anything, basically all of his attacks, I guess, end with Ito, you know, a pun on string, so...
Right.
It doesn't really have, I guess, a good translation, so they just went with the direct one, which makes sense.
God, I'm not sure exactly what happens, but let's see. Okay, he kicks at Luffy, who blocks with his crossed arms, and he's got strings following after his foot, and then...
It basically kicks Luffy really hard. He hits him with a string. Luffy can't block all that. Sends him flying. Now, normally, it would send him out of the building, but Treble was behind him and basically acts as kind of like a slingshot back into it and gets him stuck. Because you can see, like, there's one panel where he's, like, going far out, and then the next panel it's getting strong back in. It actually has sound effects. It's bloop, bloop.
And Treble says, did you really think you could win? Here we go, Luffy. I got him stuck. And so he, you know, encourages Doflamingo to crush Law's head while he still can, and Luffy's like, stop it! No, fight me! Oh, this guy's so goopy! No, I'm sticky! He objects to that.
He's just like, I'm not a goop-goop man, I'm a stick-stick man!
Luffy tries to punch his way out, but no effect whatsoever, even with armament Haki. And so he's like, oh, how is this not working? My armament Haki should be hitting him even if he is a Logia! And... Treble says, am I a Logia? Well, that won't work on me. It's pointless, rubber brains.
This is actually interesting to me, because this was something I did not realize about the series. I thought armament Haki did allow them to hit Paramecias as well. Because I thought that was also to imply that's how Garp was able to hit him back in the end of Water 7. I thought that was what the, you know, that kind of was implying, that he was able to actually hit Luffy and hurt him. Because he was technically using Haki just to make it evident at the time. But maybe
I think
that's
the idea
case.
Is because he's not actually, well, as we find out, he's not actually striking his body.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, you still see the holes there, but
let's see. So Law says, he's right. Straw Hat is pointless. He's all for show, so don't waste your time on him. The biggest reason I didn't want to sit on the hard throne was being associated with these idiots. And Domingo's like, so you can still talk, smart ass man. Treble, though, gets pissed off by this, and he launches out a whole bunch of globules of his stick, which fall onto Law, and he says, listen up, you! Doflamingo is the king! An absolute ruler of all times! However, between the current supreme officers and him, there is no hierarchy or distinction! You know why? Because one day, 30 years ago, the four of us stumbled across his limitless talent from heaven, and we gave him power.
We raised him and shaped him into the champion of evil he is today!
Flashback. Have we met on... That's Pika? God.
Yep.
Pika's changed so fucking much, hasn't he?
He got a bit buffer.
And it's very, very young. What's his name?
Virgo.
Yeah, yeah. He's there, too. Still got the food in his face. It's a fucking terrible bowl cut, too. So... I can't tell exactly who is talking to each of these. I guess they go in turn from Diamante to Virgo to then Treble, I guess. Yeah. Yep. So they're like, you know,
you have the quality of a king. We support you in everything that you do. In exchange, show us our dreams.
And so we see the little montage of, like, you know, when Doflamingo got beaten up by a thug, and he just kind of, like, says offhandedly, you know, yeah, some asshole beat me up. He ought to die. Treble's like, say no more! Goes and shoots the guy. I tripped and fell because the road was so bad. Oh, really? What kind of town is this? Burn the town to the ground.
Listen, Dofi, you are a king. No one can defy your will. And one day, you will be king of this entire sea.
So, this is kind of fucked up, isn't it? Doflamingo's had a really fucked up upbringing, hadn't he?
Well, he was born kind of evil to begin with.
And then they're just like, well, you killed your dad, so yeah, we'll just, you know, give you whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. He was born evil, then he happened to meet other people who were like, oh shit, we're gonna nurture the fuck out of your evil. And now he's just like, well, now I'm just the evil, most evil motherfucker out there, so I'm gonna relish in it.
Let's see. And Treble goes on to say, yes, we raised Dofi into a king and impressed his dignity among the henchmen, but the five of us cared for and upheld the family honor, just like a real family would.
And I'm gonna set all my sticky stick stuff on fire!
But Law says, you know, you guys are the only ones who actually think like that. Even as the so-called chief of staff, you look like nothing more than Doflamingo's clownish puppet to me.
Clownish puppet!
I love how he takes such offense to that. Like, clownish puppet! How dare you!
And Doflamingo shouts out a warning. No, he's deploying his room and you're getting too close.
Nonsense! He's on the verge of death and I already got him stick stuck!
I love that. Stick stuck.
He can't do a thing to me! Now open wide!
He tries to, like, stab Law with his staff at Law, but Law's just like, I'm a captain too. I won't have much dignity if I have to leave both of you to Straw Hat. And he flicks his finger, and his fucking disembodied arm holding his sword flips up into the air and fucking cuts Treble down the middle.
It's fucking awesome.
Oh, that is how you use a torn off arm, man. Oh, God. Oh, God. And Luffy's like, oh, my God, he got him to bleed with his sword. And suddenly, outside the plateau, Leo, for some reason, reacts to this. And everyone's like, what's wrong? What's wrong, little guys? And all of the Tontata are reacting, and they're like, I feel like a weight lifting from my chest. And they are lifting something?
Frankie.
Yeah, they're lifting something. We're done busting the factory, so let's get away from before the birdcage closes on us. Lift your feet. Oh, move your feet. Yeah. Weird pun. Anyway. So they're like, okay! They're trying to run away from the birdcage. Okay. I was very confused. I thought they were carrying something. Alright. Anyway. Treble's goop falls off from his body, and it turns out he's really scrawny underneath all of his goopy goop. And so Luffy's like, oh, no wonder my punch has just passed right through him. Doflamingo's really pissed off. And so, yeah. Treble, however, does set all of his goop on fire. And he's like, fine, I'll take you down with me! And that's the end of the chapter. So, I quite like this chapter.
This was a very good chapter.
I mean, I think it would have been very... okay, yeah, it was pretty good. But then... disembodied arm flipping into the air, cutting Treble.
It is just like an epic, like, final fuck you to just throw at him, like, flip, 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 fuck you! Like, oh, you bitch!
Oh, God!
You fuck! No, I really enjoyed it. I think it's a really good chapter. I like the action we get at the beginning. This flashback stuff here works. And again, I like it when they do try to give at least some hint that they're like, look, you know, we're evil, but we are a family. We do look out for each other and have loyalty to one another. And I like this idea that they were almost propping Doflamingo up to be, like, their king. They were just like, you know, we'll follow you everywhere because you have the hockey that can do it. You're going to be our leader. And, you know, they're all bowing to him. Like, the levels they'll go through, like, oh, this guy was, you know, beat me up. So it's like, oh, we shoot him in the face. Like, oh, this town had, you know, shitty roads. So we burned it to the ground. Like, fucking, all right. You got a pretty intimidating crew there.
I like the idea that they've impressed this idea of family on the Don Quixote family, but it seems to only really mostly apply to the top guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, sure, they'll be nice when things are going well, but then they'll get to the point where it's like, baby five, you're useless, so I'm going to kill you now. So, and, you know, of course, Bellamy's like, ah, you're worthless to me, so get out, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is nice of Law to go, it's like, delusional motherfucker, no one thinks that about your stupid crew except you assholes. So
they're like, wait, you say Lao Ji doesn't care about us?
So there's like a note of nobility to their relationship, yes, but there are certainly limits to it as well.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't actually necessarily related to this week's chapter One Piece, but something I wanted to mention is because it's been kind of growing up a little bit. But I've opened up a One Piece role-playing forum that it's basically, you know, a writing center. You come in if you want to participate in it, and you know you create your characters in the One Piece world, mostly original island, stuff like that. It's a writing forum based around, you know, kind of improving people's writing skills, collaborative writing, and, you know, creating a character and growing them. But it's also got forums for other topics, and it's becoming, to a certain extent, sort of an unofficial WMR forum where we actually have regular discussions going on in one of the forums, like about, you know, all the new manga of the week. Like, there's very regular discussions about Fairy Tail and World Trigger and Bleach and things like that. So I just kind of wanted to throw it out there just in case there's anybody listening to the podcast, doesn't follow on Twitch or anything like that, and was curious about it. If you wanted to participate, you could find it over at odar.conforums.com. It's onedreamadventure.conforums.com. So you can check it out there. Just wanted to throw that out there in case people are interested in participating in some of that.
Right, who? On to Toriko, Gourmet 319. Down the mountain we go! So, the pets, basically, are leaving.
I love this abruptness. Just like, the pets were like, oh, this thing's scary. And that fur is really terrifying. All right, we're peacing out.
Yeah, Kako just like, look, I have a little scrap of something. Get the fuck away from me. And they're like, oh, okay. And so they're just like, oh, shit. And then they were like, we must go and part ways from Toriko Company. And
Nick, but they missed the flying Nimbot!
So they leave with dignity.
What, just because they don't ride a flying cloud of poop?
Presumably they're going to come back super huge and strong, and we're going to have to stop, like, having excuses as to why the pets aren't helping Toriko and everybody. Yeah. Toriko's group comes across the beaten and bruised Choo Choo Chomper, and they're like, are you okay? And Komachi's like, what the fuck is that thing? It's like, it's a camping monster called a Choo Choo Chomper. Well, okay. Sonny, can I have a drop of pear? Okay. And Gotch is like, I learned how to use forbidden resurrection magic. Womp! And the Choo Choo Chopper is as good as you. And it's like, oh, he's fine. How the fuck did you do that, Komatsu? Well, back during the festival, I sort of just picked it up while trying to save Toriko. You just picked it up? Yes.
That is what I said. Okay, then. Fair enough. Can you heal Toriko's arm? Yeah, no.
Why not?
I actually need an arm to do that.
Oh, bullshit. Everyone's like, where are the pets? And Coco thinks to himself, they were radiating strong determination when they left. Yeah, okay, that's nice, Coco. Shut up.
So, like, doesn't tell us a fucking answer.
And Zebra's like, well, what the fuck ever. They got spooked by that fucking lizard there. Who gives a shit? Let's drink pear, motherfuckers! Oh yeah, but how are we gonna get down the Zero Mountain Range? Because Choo Choo Chomper is just recovered and can't carry us anywhere. And Yun Yun is not gonna carry us anywhere either. So what are we gonna do? Well, I guess we can just walk. Oh, come on. That could take days. And we don't have enough air supplied.
Why don't we just ride a giant cloud of poop?
Where did this cloud of poop come from? From Bambina's ass. And it is actually a safety zone transportation thing. Just this giant cloud of shit. Let's go. And then they do.
Yeah, they book it.
And be like, hey, look, 100G Mountain is regenerating. How is that possible?
Actually, the one thing I do like is the monkeys all show up, and Komatsu's like, who are they? And Tarka's like, oh, let me introduce you to them, Komatsu. These are monkeys. Like, that's his only explanation.
Because the only one he knows is a yai-yai ape.
Komatsu's just like, I could have gathered that, you asshole.
So they get on this giant mound of shit, and they're like, onward to the foot of Zero Mountain Rage, to the Birthcry Tree. Wow, this is fast. It smells super stinky, but it's super swift. Go, flying Nimbut. And Coco's like, so, where do you think this thing came from? And then we see where it came from. As Bambina is on. He is farting up a storm, and he seems proud of himself, too. He's very proud of himself.
As he should.
I made that. That is an epic dump, motherfuckers.
I fart out monsters stronger than you.
So we're literally using this giant pile of shit as a vehicle? Yes, the pilgrims would ride around on these things for miles. Okay. And we're here! Good. No more adventures atop mound of shit, please.
I hope that, like, I love the choo-choo chomper, but I hope the flying Nimbut replaces it.
No. So, EI is like, oh, oh, and Torika's like, oh, hey, look at that, there's monkeys from all over the continent waiting for us, and there are a whole bunch of monkeys like, yay! And they're like, alright, let's drink acacia soup, yay! And Kaka is looking down on a group of the apes and is smiling.
I'm thinking that's not Kaka.
Or maybe it's like the real Kaka?
Yeah, like I think it's the actual one. Because they mentioned that Kaka was one of the three hermit treasure something.
And presumably was not a blue nitro.
Yeah, I'm assuming that the real Kaka actually is a good nitro. Unlike, you know, like the one we saw back in...
They're like, hello, Toriko and friends. I am... They start beating her up.
Yeah, they're like... No, they're good ones, too! They're good ones, too!
Alright, so, yeah. This sure is a winding down chapter.
Mm-hmm. Arc should be over relatively soon.
Just... I can't believe, like, Toriko's gotten to the point where it's just like they ride around in a giant mountain of monkey shit and just like... Yeah, okay, yeah.
I mean, what else do you say? You're like, alright, let's do it.
Okay. World Trigger, Chapter 98, Nasu Squad Part 3. So, last chapter, we were revealed to the fact that Husei just hangs around Tamakoma's headquarters and he's watching the match along with Tamakoma 1 squad, and this chapter opens up with Konami mocking him by saying, the weak will lose, that's all there is to it, and then just punching him on the head. Oh, you think you can just fix it? Why do you think something so obvious will make you sound cool? And you're just like, oh, shut up.
Being a jerk.
Yeah, it's like, you guys are allowed to stay here, so just say something smarter, you asshole. Don't you realize what kind of position you're in? Our agents were kidnapped by your people and some almost died, so come on. And she just starts noogieing him through his hoodie. Fucking prisoner of war, subjected to noogie. That's cruelty right there. Yosuke? That's his name, right?
Isn't it? Which one?
Little annoying kid?
I don't know. I just call him Capybara Kid.
Capybara Kid. That makes him sound way cooler than he actually is. The Capybara Kid.
The Capybara Kid.
So he just kind of like holds out his hand to Konami to like calm her down, you know, to get her to stop nuking their POW. I have no idea why I find that so amusing, but I do. And Yotaro, that's his name. So he's just like, all that matters is that Osamu is alive. Everything else is in the past. Trying to look all wise and stuff, like his helmet is glinting or something from his cool expression.
And Kami chops him on the top of the head. He's like, "What do you think you are, you little bastard?" And he goes, he gets chopped on the head and goes, "Burp!"
As one means. Would do.
I know if I get karate chopped on the head, I go, "Burp."
Yeah, I tend to, "Burp." I don't know what's, like, how do you make that sound from getting hit? Like, "Burp."
"Burp." "Burp." So, Hiyosei is like, "Well, you guys drag me out here anyways. I'm telling you. Aren't you gonna interrogate me and torture me?
Aren't you gonna tie me up and put me on a Trojan horse?" Just like, "Look, we've had enough of that for right, one week of manga."
Celestial spirits and neighbors come from the same alternate world. Got it. So
it's a good basis for a fan fiction.
Well, Yotaro does fucking say to him, like, you want to be tortured, so you'd enjoy it." And Hiyosei doesn't have a response for that. So I'm like, okay. Why do you know about that, Yotaro? You're like 5.
It's like, I torture things.
I enjoy it.
He's like, "That's not the first capybara."
So, she says his name. Hang on. No, she doesn't. Fuck. She just calls him the boss. God damn it.
Just, he's May Hughes. Let's just call him what he is.
Not Mays Hughes. Is like, God. He's like, "Oh, you know, we gotta treat prisoners with respect, and, you know, if we have to trade for our own agents someday, it might go a lot more smoothly. Well, I mean, that's our policy, at least." And, but Konami points out, "Well, they kind of left him behind, so he might not be worth anything for trades." And Karasuma's like, "Well, he is smart and talented, and he's an elite fighter." Well, you know, that's what Jin said. And I was like, "What, Jin said that? Really?" And he's like, "Well, no. I just made up what I thought he would say."
I love that. Everyone's just like fucking respecting this kid, and they're just like, "Wait, Jin didn't say he's super awesome?" He's like, "Well, no, not exactly. I kind of just assume that's what he is, so I don't actually know."
And like, Hiyosei is kind of like, gets a little happy that, you know, Jin said that about him, because, you know, Jin fought him and so on and so forth. But then when he's just like, "No, I just made that up," and he's just like, "What? Why he didn't say that?"
He's like, "I'm not super duper awesome."
So, he said, "Yeah, you know, I just bet Jin was thinking something like that, since he did bring him here." But anyway, you know, match! Come on, let's watch it. Bit of a recap. Attackers are on the West Bank, and Hira from Nasu Squad, the sniper, is over there. And, Tachikawa?
Tachikawa is one of the announcers.
Yes, Tachikawa. Yes. He's like, "Oh man, this is gonna be really tough for Kuma Guy, because she's up against the two aces, and it's gonna be tough even in the free-for-all. And, you know, I guess she could run away or bail out, but Jin says, "Well, you know, she can still earn points. And NASA Squad has one more person. The key to the battle on the West Bank is NASA Squad sniper, Agent Hura." So everyone says to Akane, "You know, just, you know, don't shoot yet, because you'll just reveal your position. So make sure that when you do shoot, that you'll make it count, because otherwise you'll reveal your position and they'll go and kill you," basically. And Tachikawa does point this out, you know, Ko and Kugo want her to shoot so that she'll reveal her position, and then they can tip the balance and so on and so forth. Main announcer chick is just like, "Ah, but at this rate, it's just a matter of time before Agent Kumagai fumbles." And Kumagai is thinking to herself, he's going to do it when looking at Murakami. He is going to make the move that's going to tip the balance. I know that he'll move first, because, you know, he communicated to his teammates that he would join them as quickly as possible. So, I guess that kind of makes sense for logic. But Yuma is the one who seems to be attacked first. He ends up in the middle as both Murakami and Kumagai slash at him. Presumably, Kumagai reacted to Murakami's movement so that they would attack him from both sides. I guess that's the point of what happened. Yuma manages to deflect both blows and spin into the air, and then Akane shoots him, but even as that happens, he summons a grasshopper under his palm and deflects himself up in the air to dodge it, and he just goes, "Oh, there you are," and goes off after her. Just, God, Yuma is still such a fucking show-off sometimes, isn't he?
Well, he did lose his arm doing this.
Yes, he did. Did he actually lose all the way?
Not at this point, but he gets it cut, and Tachikawa notes, like, his arm's dead at this point.
Yeah. So, he goes after Akane. She tries to shoot him down, and everyone's like, "Oh, man, you know, she could bail out." Kumagai tells her to bail out, but she keeps on shooting, And Jin says she chose not to bail out. And the Yamcha says, yes, bailing out is a valid option. If an agent chooses to voluntarily bail out, they deny the enemy potential points. But the rank wars rules state that you must bail out while there are no enemy agents within a 60-meter radius. Basically, you gotta make sure nobody's around before you hit B. So, Kyuga is already in the 60-meter mark, and because she spent time shooting at him rather than immediately retreating, she can't bail out anymore, so she's gotta face him. And, NASA Squad's operator is like, Akane, no! But she shoots these two meteors that were laid out near buildings in Yuma's path, collapse the buildings around him, sends up this tremendous massive explosions, and they're like, ah, yes, those were meant for the bridge originally, but of course, you know, Chika blew up the bridge, so they still have them left over. And Akai says to herself, all right, at this distance, as she sees Yuma's arm coming through the debris, I won't miss! And it's just his arm, because he sacrificed his arm as a decoy, comes in, cuts through Akane, and destroys her Trion system and forces her to bail out. And so Yuma gets his first kill secured in the match, and that is the end of the chapter.
I'm sad, Nick. I liked Akane. I didn't want her to be the first to go. Why is
I am surprised that she is the first to go, honestly.
I really expected that douchey hat kid on the other side to be the first to go.
Oh, you mean the other douchey hat kid?
Yeah. Well, I don't think her hat's douchey. I think her hat's
stylish.
Well,
she's not douchey. It's stupid.
Okay. Well, regardless, her hat is stylish, and you're wrong. But
regardless of how you feel about it, Nick, you're wrong.
You're wrong, and I hate you. No. This is the hill I'm choosing to die on. This is what ends Weekly Manga Recap. I'm like, her hat's not stupid, Nick!
Yes, it is!
I just slam my mic over, walk out.
That's the disagreement people thought that we had several weeks ago.
This is the one they're just like, we thought that these two got past the bubble for they could survive anything.
But, oh my god.
But not Akane's dumbass hat.
I was actually just thinking about that a few days ago. I was like, man, I can't believe I was right about that after all of my outlandish predictions. I've been completely wrong since then. No, that I was completely right about that one.
I can't believe we have like the screaming match that got into that.
I was like, I was right! Or rather, it was like, I'm right, you're wrong. And then the anime came out. I was like, validation!
Oh, man.
And by that point, you were like,
you're like, what? What the fuck's a bubble fruit, Nick?
I was like, but I was right.
I won. There was anyway, time now.
Road trigger.
Yeah, this is a good chapter. I like it. I'm curious to see, I guess, the battle on the other side's a bit more interesting. But I'm more so interested because I can't foresee Nasu Squad being just bodies for points at this point. I can't see what just happened here with Akane just being par for the course of what's going to happen to the other members, especially when they built up this idea that the three members wanted to stay together, they wanted to do all they could to get points. I feel like Yuma's injury right here is going to cost him. You know, this is going to show that his reckless attitude can't always triumph at the end. He's against two aces. This is going to get him fucked. So the battle...
Well, no. Yuma's... Kumagai is not the ace. Nasu is.
I thought it was Kumagai was the ace. I thought it was... Because the way they said it was that the structure of each team is the same.
No, it's not.
And each of them...
It's the same in that one has a gun... They each have one gunner, one sniper, one attacker. But the attacker is in Tamakoma and Susanori... I'm not sure I got that one right. Are the aces... But Nasu's ace is, well, Nasu.
Oh, okay. I just assumed Nasu was just
remember
the best
shooter. Remember they made a big deal out of her Vipers and stuff?
Yeah, I just assumed, because they also made a point that she was the only shooter worth a damn in any of the three groups, so I just thought she was the best. Anyway, I can't imagine from that Yuma gets out of this. In my mind, what I'm seeing is Yuma loses. He gets taken out next because he went reckless on this.
What I am predicting at this juncture is Yuma and Murakami kind of pressure each other really hard. Murakami has the advantage because of Yuma's missing arm. But Murakami cuts Yuma down, and immediately Kumagai gets him. Mm-hmm. That's what I think happens.
The important thing, though, is then what happens on the other side. Does Osamu pull things out and actually show himself, you know, show off some skills? Or does Chika do something cool? And Nick, I'm playing Pokemon... Alpha Sapphire now, and I just realized that Chica's a fucking Shroomish. She's the exact same goddamn face. If you just turn the face, like, the mouth upside down.
If you make it look a little bit less constantly frowny.
Yeah, if you just flip the V the other way, it's the same fucking face.
Well, that means that she'll evolve into Breloom and kick all sorts of ass.
Then. Yes. I'm waiting for the day our Akane evolves into, or our fucking Chika evolves into a Breloom. Yeah. But yeah, that's it. That was a good chapter.
Pretty good manga in general this week. Not as good as last week, but I mean, last week was phenomenal, so.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, glad that we are. Yeah, I had a good time talking about manga this week, so I think that is going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap. Thank you for joining us, everybody who joined us for the live recording. Enduring our technical difficulties early on in the episode, we had to switch over to Hitbox instead of twitch.tv/RoloT, where we normally record the episodes Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For additional changes that we encounter, make sure to follow us on Twitter to stay updated on that stuff. He is at RoloT and I'm at YRulerOfTime. We tweet out start time, we tweet out changes, all sorts of stuff, and also we talk about completely unrelated things in our spare time as well. Be sure to check out past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com as well as on iTunes. Make sure that you leave a rating or a review so that we can beat those damn woodworking asshole podcasts.
We got one this week, actually, from Eternal Haka. I actually like this one a lot. Eternal Haka says, WMR is fun to listen to every week. Their opinions are relatively unfiltered and honest, and because of them, they've led me to pick up a number of series over the years, as well as buy a subscription to Shonen Jump. So it's very good to hear that our listening to us has encouraged you to support legal distribution, and glad to hear that, and hope you're enjoying your Shonen Jump subscription.
Oh, yeah. Be sure to send us criticism, questions, suggestions. Either put them in the comments section or email them to us, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. And special thanks to Steve Manor, Tucker Artist, neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com, idropboobs.tumblr.com, patreon.com/Steve Manor. Check out all those sites for his artwork. And also, special thanks to The Infamous Planet and Felix Dark 2 for the visual additions of our podcast. Next week, we should hit Spirit Circle. So look forward to that, people.
Yes, and that's it. I don't have a wacky topic to go out on, Nick. I blew everything with my insights on the governor. You gonna go see Ultron?
Yeah, definitely.
I got opening night tickets. I'm pretty excited about it.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm not going on opening night. I'm not going until the Saturday of that weekend.
I'm gonna text you everything that happens. You just get texted like 11 p.m. for a fucking Thursday night. It's just like, fucking Captain America dies. You're just like, isn't even another movie coming out? I'm like, yeah, they really pulled the wool over our eyes.
Well, they do have, well, I mean, Falcon has taken over as Captain America in the comics.
And Bucky's been Captain America as well.
Yeah.
They have options.
So, yeah, there you go.
All right, we need something funny to actually go out on. That was like insightful.
Let's talk about the aerodynamics of Shit Mountain transportation, because I really feel.